This audio is a talk by Renit Lenton, exploring the deepening relations between race, migration, the state and power in contemporary Ireland. It was recorded January 2010 as part of the Better Questions seminar series in Shomersbury in Dublin. This audio is of the questions and answers session that followed the talk itself. If you want to listen to the talk, you can do so on indymedia.ie. It's article 95577.
So the easiest question now is how to articulate the prescriptions for the state that don't fall in this multicultural or ethnic ideology that we have seen is a double-faced weapon.
I was talking to Mick on the way, and Mick said basically, in the end, we need the state to fund us. EU or the state to fund us, you know. But everybody, you know, we need the state to fund us on our terms. The state will not fund us on our terms. And it never funded us on our terms. I've been involved, I was involved with CADIC, I was the chairperson. But, you know, basically, when they started funding us, which was one of the philanthropists, it changed completely. It became a completely different thing. It was really a bottom-up grassroots organization started by a group of African women. The African women were written out of the history of the place. You know, it took quite a while to write them back in. You know, it started by somebody making a call to me. Said people are getting deportation letters. What can we do? I said, okay, let's get some people together. And that's how it started. But when it was rewritten for the funding application, they were not there. So the point, if we work on racism, first of all, and if we work on migration, we have to talk to those who are racialized. And we have to start anti-racism from their lived experience. That's first of all, in my opinion. All the rest of it is useless. I mean, look, you all more or less, we all are white, more or less, yeah? And I would take a bet that most of you are at least born Christian, yeah? No? I mean, yes, more or less. So we are very kind of way homogeneous group here, you know? Even though you are great and all the rest of it. And very often you go to places and people still think, in this day and age, that it's not necessary to listen to migrants in a central way. I was recently in a thing organized by the Court Authority. A forum of experts to discuss racism and racial stereotypes. The reason they did it, because they had collaborated in a EU project with somebody in Spain who was doing this project and had some funding, and they got people together. And all the speakers were all... There were people around the table who were racialized, but nobody was invited to speak. When I raised it, I got... said, why have you not, after all these years, have you not invited one of the migrants, one of the travelers to speak? And there were travelers, there were migrants there. I was answered by quite a lot of anger, you know. What does it matter? You know, it does matter. First of all, this is one way. But the point is, it's not an answer. It's not a full answer. Because migrants are, many migrants organizations at least, would say that they need to adopt the state's, they've learned to adopt the state's speak in order to, they think this way they can get into the group, you know. So if you look at most migrant organization websites and strategic plan, they have integration, interculturalism, big time in it. Okay? But the question is, they do it slightly differently. Many of them are kind of, yes, resisting, and yet adopting. And I can't tell them not to do it, because they've learned that this is the best way to actually exist. So they need some core funding, they need rent, they need telephone costs, they need their salaries and all the rest of it. But at the same time, some groups are getting it, some groups are not getting it. The groups that are playing the state game and the EU game get it. And it's complicated, all these application forms. Anybody who's been involved in any application, you know how difficult it is. So how can we break through? Now, there's one group in town that does some work on it, and that's Residents Against Racism. You know? They actually work, they have... I think they have very little money. They have a couple of mobile phones. They have some. They have a post box in the Connolly Bookshop in where is it? In Essex Street. No, the Connolly, the Temple Bar. Yeah, it's called the Connolly Bookshop.
Yes.
Yeah, the Marxist Bookshop, and they have nothing, you know, but they work with solicitors who are doing work pro bono, they work with a very good link to the media and the trade union, and whenever it's necessary, they mobilize against deportation. They usually don't succeed. Here and there, they have a success, but they really help asylum seekers on the ground. You know, this is good work. You know, there's another group in Cork, the Cork Anti-Racism Network, doing similar work. You know, yeah. But we have to break through. Okay. Yeah.
Why do you think that a seminar about race is only made by white people, and why nobody else came? And where are those who are actually working the racist, anti-racism that you just talked about? Why didn't they come?
You didn't invite them, maybe? I don't know. I forgot to send. I forgot to send an email to Residents Against Racism. It's my mistake, but I should have sent them an email. But the point is, they're blue in the face. These people have been around. I've been working with Residents Against, kind of around Residents Against Racism since the mid-90s. They possibly knew. They could have given us some good experiences, some good stories now here about what they're doing. I don't know. But people always say nobody comes. You know, this Equality Authority, when I raised it, I read it in situ, but afterwards I met somebody in the quality. I said, why did you not invite any migrants to this speaker? Well, we tried, but everybody we asked couldn't or didn't come. And then I asked some friends. Salome Mbugwa, who is the chair of Akidua, is on the board of the Equality Authority. She has never heard of this seminar. She was not asked. Okay? So it's not true. People say it's difficult to get them together, but yes, it's difficult, but make an effort. No? I don't know why. Why? Because at the moment, I think at the moment, nobody wants to know. I don't know. I really don't know. Some people are sick and tired, but it's your way to I'll give you another example. There's a group working with the Somali refugees. I don't know if you know about them. They're called Horn of Africa People's Aid. Somali and Sudanese refugees are in desperate state. So much so, many of them came as family reunification or as unaccompanied minors. And the guy who's kind of chairing it says that he's really terrified that many of the young people will be taken either by the drug barons or by Islamic extremists. He said that it is, at the moment, crucial. There's not that many people of them. But he's organized single-handedly an afternoon, after school, homework club. He got 80 Irish volunteers to work to help his children do living cert. Okay? We're working with him on a small research project now. You know? And he asked us, can you help me? Because if we do research, maybe we can put the research out there and we highlight the situation. They're around here. They're all around here. Don't know exactly where the office is, but they are not far from here. You know? Many of them live not far from here. You know? I think social movements should reach out. You know, there's ways to reach out and not just sit here and say, yeah, we understand Foucault, we understand Agamben, we understand the Badiou, Grant. You know, or maybe we don't understand, but we think, yeah, these, you know what I mean? It's time to actually change the modus operandi, I think, personally. I mean, maybe I'm just being very naive, you know, but I think that's the only way. And also, the other thing is important to bring it back into the discourse, to start talking again about racism. You know, people say, no, you're not talking about racial states again. Yeah, I am talking about racial states again. Because nobody else is talking about it. And my colleague Brian Fanning thinks I'm absolutely off the wall when I talk about it. And he's doing research about the same things. I mean, it's not a question of winning against one academic theory against another academic theory. You know? It really is about doing. You know? I think. I don't know, maybe I don't. Maybe I'm just being very... What do you think? What do people think?
Yeah. And you were saying about the issues going off people's radar in general, it's massively important for it to be addressed.
That's right.
Yeah.
Deeply, I think now. When Martina did the research, I mean, she found out that these people she interviewed, many of them said, yeah, our colleagues, if they were doctors or whatever, our colleagues who are doctors, say from Pakistan or from whatever, but they're not really, we don't really see them as migrants because there was a class element there. But they're not going to be migrants. And the children are being called Paki at school, you know. But these people are not seeing it as an issue. And since the recession, there's another issue of competition perspective. You've seen, I'm sure you've seen in The Guardian about the since the victory of the BNP in some local elections, racist incidents have gone up by, in some boroughs, by 40%. So it's discursive change. I'm not suggesting BNP are doing all the racist attacks, but the fact that they've actually won encourages the thugs, you know?
Mm.
So I think it's important to continue to talk about it. I think this one is...
I didn't quite catch it. One of the points you made earlier on regarding Ireland's immigration policy being very unique within Europe.
No, it was seen as being very unique.
It was seen as very...
One of the arguments that the government made before the citizenship referendum with Ireland had an entirely generous immigration policy in relation to other European states. Therefore, it had to plug the hole because otherwise it would be seen as too generous. And once somebody becomes a citizen, they become a citizen and they have freedom of movement to the other EU states. But according to Colin Harvey, this makes no sense whatsoever, you know? And he's a lawyer, you know?
Until I moved here in late 2007, I used to live in Leeds and Bradford. I was involved in about racist anti-fascist activity in Leeds and Bradford from the late 80s onwards. But a couple months after I moved here, a Polish friend asked me whether I could get hold of statistics for racist attacks in Ireland, because he couldn't find where they were. So I said, I'll have a look. And I couldn't find where they were either. I realized through the media that was 2004, the Gardaí said they would start collecting statistics, but not on the Gardaí things, not on the CSO. I asked contacts I had in Residence Against Race and they didn't know either, so I got in contact with the CSO, the Cyber Statistics Office, and a month and a half later the guy from the CSO finally came back with some statistics. My problem with this is the fact that no one was asking for these statistics. That the various groups that are doing the little campaigns is great, but there's a distinct lack of work that the monitoring projects used to do in Britain. I think there's only the new monitoring project left now. But there is a lack of any sort of racist monitoring. So you have this thing here, is that most people think, well, there's no racism because I don't hear about it. Because there's this three wise monkeys approach. You hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. People go, there's no racism here in Ireland, I don't know hear anything about it. So, well, that's because no one is actually paying any attention to the racist violence that's going on, etc. So without an actual project of monitoring and making visible what's actually happening, you know, we can't even fight what we can't see, if you see what I mean. So first of all, we need to make visible, and that's a work that is really lacking.
When the NCCRI was still in existence until January 2009, they were monitoring not racist attacks, incidents, racially motivated incidents. It was changed from crimes to incidents, and it was deliberate. I've heard the Minister of Justice actually say it in a public event, and the chairperson of the then National Action Plan Against Racism, or the NCCR, one of them, Stacia Crickley, nodded enthusiastically. These are not attacks, these are incidents. There's no law. In Ireland, there's no law against racism. There's one law which in 1989, Incitement to Hatred Act, and this law has been so weak that I think one or two cases were able to be taken against it. The ministers, successive ministers, O'Donoghue and then McDougall, have promised to review this law, and it's been not done. And since Dermot O'Hearn came, not a word about it. Okay? So there is actually a general, and as you heard, Michael McDougall said before the referendum, he said basically that there's no race in Ireland. He said it again to Metro Éireann. He said Ireland is not a racist country. Talk to any migrant of colour of their everyday experience. And people will tell you things from very minor things that you think, okay, it doesn't really matter. One of my PhD students, who was Nigerian, said today, he said he was very devout Christian. He said, today my Christian patience was tested. I went to the shop, my two kids were in the car, and I went and I stood, and two Irish ladies behind me, and they were served first. And when I asked, why are you serving them first? I'm here. She looked through me, she didn't answer. And he said, my Christian patience. From that to beatings. Okay? this happens all the time. People say, but why is it racism? Why is it not? You know, when, as McPherson said when he defined racism and incident, he actually said racism when the victim experiences the racism. Because yes, you're being beaten up, it hurts just as much if you're not called a dirty nigger, go back home. It hurts just as much. But when you also call dirty nigger, go back home, it hurts more. You know? And they know it. The point is, there's no monitoring whatsoever at the moment. My friend Dil Wickham-Sink, who's doing the Global Village program on Talk FM, 98 FM, said that every time she does a program, she gets the most horrific texts, including nigger bitch, go home. She's from Sri Lanka. She's not exactly, doesn't quite fit into a nigger, you know? But this is it, you know? And it's there all the time. Look at any website against Roma. One of my students has started, has done a master's on anti-Roma postings on one of the forums. It is there all the time. And people know it. But people basically are saying, it's not really there, it's not that serious. And migrants sometimes are fed up talking about it, and they're scared of talking about it, depending on the status, you know? But ask any person of color, they'll tell you. You know, so yes, monitoring it is a good start, you know? But we need a state for that, don't we?
Not necessarily.
Well, I think that visibilization issue is hugely important, not just in terms of kind of the extent of stuff, but also the complexity, because we know that from what Renee was talking about, the number of kind of mechanisms and discourses that are out there to put into practice this kind of racial exclusion is actually fairly complex. But I also wanted to say, and maybe Renee has experienced this, that using this kind of research as a strategy to find out about the world, but also as a way of getting into contact with the world, because my experience in social movements has been that it can be very difficult to get into contact with other people in society who are having different experiences for a variety of reasons. And that's very much part of how power is reproduced in capitalism, by separating people, particularly in relation to racism. So research, potentially, I mean, or at least it's something that I can imagine myself actually doing, you know, for example, in this area, as a way of getting out and talking to people, finding out what their experiences are, and in doing that, kind of finding out what's going on, but also overcoming that division, and at the same time allowing the experiences of migrants to be the kind of focus, if you like, of what you're trying to do. And maybe you have some experience from research projects.
Well, the research project we've done on migrant-led organizations has been really, really interesting. We've done some interviews, like one-to-one interviews, and some of the stories are unbelievable, but also the resilience of migrants in starting these organizations. You know, people, most of them start by one person who has an idea, I want a group running. The groups start from the fact that people are isolated and they feel, yeah, there are another 10 Kenyans around me, I'd like to, you know, okay. But the point is, you can actually start a research project in this area and just maybe limited to Mountjoy Square, you know, and approach people and say, we'd like to invite you to talk about your experiences. Invite people in and create maybe. One thing you see, even if there was monitoring, when there was monitoring, there was no place for people to go and talk about their experiences. You know, sometimes you need to talk about it. At the moment we know from the people in the HSE that the mental health problems of people living in the direct provision holding camps are horrific, and the reason they are horrific is because people are idle. They're going crazy. They're just going crazy. Many of these people are very highly qualified, have very good educational qualification. They would love to work, even voluntarily. Even voluntary groups very often don't take them because of the insurance situation. You know, so they go crazy. So what happens is, various things happen. For instance, in relation to women, many of the women are tempted to sell their sex. I mean, Who can blame them? There's nothing else. But they also do other things. They pull together this 19 euro 60 together, and they create this collective. And when somebody needs money, they there's all sorts of amazing things happening, you know, within this very limited situation. You know, going to one of the these centers and talking with people would be a great project for this work, you know, and offering maybe tuition, after school tuition for the children, something. You could offer things, you know, but for that you need to give time, you know. And people have to decide to give time. You have to define it, I think, and then publicize it in a way. You don't have to publicize things academically. You can also do academic articles. You can probably you can publish online now, and people read things online. You know, you create your own blog, you know, and really create the knowledge. And when people, you can decide to do stuff on racist incidents. What happened to people? And put it, start like that. It may mushroom. It will mushroom. You know. But to say that the state should do it, it doesn't do it.
Well, my point was the Gardaí had been put into this position in 2004, where they said, okay, we will monitor racially aggravated incidents. But we can hardly blame them for not doing them if no one goes to them and says, where are your figures? I demand to know. You know, we need to.
We try.
There's no point saying the state should do something if we're not banging on the door saying, you know, you said you're going to do this, now where is it? So did that need pressure?
Each of you undertake something very simple. Each of you undertake to make one phone call to the Garda Racial and Intercultural Office. It's a very specific unit in Harcourt Square. Each of you individually, not the same day, and not in the same, you know, try kind of, because if it's, they'll know that it's a group. You know? my name is Mariana Fonteira. I'm really interested in experience of racism. Can you give me some figures? You know, you there's about 25 of you here. Make 25 calls. You know, start from there. Write a letter to the Irish Times. You know that people have told you that racism is on an increase, and you were wondering why there's no monitoring. You know, the Irish Times, not only the Irish Times, also the other papers. You know, try that, and then this will grow. But you have to start somewhere. To say somebody should never works. I've always believed that when I want something done, I do it myself. Starting myself. Now, it becomes sometimes other things, you know. CADIC was very good to start, and it was great to be chair of it for a while. After a while, it moved in a different direction. I said, okay, guys, I'm not the right chair for you now, because it became very legal and whatever, and somebody else took the chair, which is fine. If I had to start something, to be active in it, and if it doesn't suit anymore, to make room for somebody else, you know, as well. Because otherwise, you stick to power, you want to be chair of something, you know. Sorry, yeah. Yeah,
I just wanted to go back to the idea of going into holding centres to talk to people about their experiences, but it's made very, very difficult to do that. And it's exactly what I'm trying to do at the moment as part of a research project. And from what I'm understanding is some of the centres are directly state-run and some are farmed out as businesses. And because of their negative experiences of researchers going in and portraying the centres negatively, now I was told only this week that the state-run hostels won't let any researchers in at all, point blank. The other ones may possibly.
I know that. But there's a way to go around it. I mean, look at the Trinity Immigration Initiative Migrant Networks project, and there's loads of organizations there. Look at getting that with some of them. Akidwa is great. Akidwa is the African and Migrant Women's Network. It's great relationships with hostels, women in hostels. And you can organize the meetings through them. The Africa Center, which I believe now is in very direct kind of threat of being closed down. There's also, on our website, there's also, I mean, just say, the website is just a resource, I'm not saying because, you know, just a resource. There's some organization which are refugee support groups. They might help you to get in. But getting in physically is not only the only way. You can actually make contact with people and meet them outside. Getting in physically, yes, it's very difficult. Some places you're only allowed to go to the first floor, not allowed to go to people's rooms. It's holding camps. People call it direct provision centers, but I think, and you know, we've just had some interviews recently with the Somalis, they call it refugee camps. Now, refugee camps has a different sound than direct provision centers. That's what they call it, you know? So, you know, various organizations, the Somalis might help you, the HAPA, which is a Horn of Africa People's Aid, may also help you to get in touch with some people, you know. But remember also that these are not the only people who experience racism. These are people of color, mostly. People from, you know, non-EU, non-national. Rich people being murdered, you know, and poor are not really talking about racism against themselves. Making links with people from Lithuania, from Latvia, from Poland, etc., is also interesting because this is racism without race. Racism not based on biology, but it's racism all the same. You know, like anti-Semitism is racism, like anti-travelerism is racism. You know, so there is ways through the travelers. You can get in touch with the Roma people. They have a good Roma group there. There are ways to do it. You know, it's difficult, but it's possible. You know.
I have a question. Do you think that if the situation got worse, like that this soft racial policing of the Irish state become more explicit, as you say, do you think the situation could radicalize? Do you think people could become more, migrants could become more politically engaged? I say this because unfortunately I come to Italy and now it's a really a bad period to be Italian. If you read the news some weeks ago it happened in southern of Italy that some workers started to emancipate from their condition of almost slavery. And I think this is okay. This is really bad because it reflects the condition immigrants workers are living in Italy. But it is also good because around this issue, a big process of politicization has begun around them. So I think like we should even be really to try to see. When people start to take speech, like when people start to emancipate themselves and then be faithful to that kind of facts, that occasions, instead of trying to represent them through those migrant group, I don't know, Somali representative group, there were always groups representing minority, but they revealed themselves completely unuseful. So,
I think it would be fantastic, but I, at the moment, you see, it may change again. But during the Celtic Tiger years, migrants had something to gain by going with the state because there was funding. Small funding, big funding, but there was funding. There's, you know, grants from Dublin City, Dublin County, council, there were funding around. So people were kind of thought if they, and every one of them would do their funding application, had to put in something about integration, you know, etc. And they did, and they put in the culturalism, and they got some funding. Now the funding is going lower and lower. So this is time for radicalization. You know, it will be, unfortunately, I think there will be radicalization in both ways. I think we are in danger of seeing the right wing element rising as well. Although so far they've not managed to be very effective, like the immigration control platform really were derisory. They're very tiny, but you know the BNP have shoots here. We've had some students who were in the BNP, and we had lots of trouble. We have the MPhil and I think racial study, which I direct, had one day the notice board was kind of covered in speakers and various things, but it's there, and this is in danger as well of happening. And amongst the migrants from Eastern Europe, there's quite a lot of people very, very racist against people of color. So it's not like all the migrants are good people and all the Irish are bad people, not at all. So I mean, I think we could be on the cusp, but we have to somehow facilitate it by giving people space, and this is fantastic space, you know, inviting people here to talk radical. You know, to talk radical talk would be fantastic, and some of them will have to teach you much more than I can teach you. You know, because they really are. But you have to actually allow them the forum, not to be afraid. This is not about funding. Nobody here from the Department of Justice or the City Council, or whatever. You can talk to us. And many migrants just want, you know, they just want a quiet life. There isn't been. I'm just reading Paul Gilroy's book again. There Ain't No Black in the Union Jack, which is about. A lot of it is about organization of migrants or racialized population in Britain. And we don't have it yet. Maybe the numbers are not here? I don't know. But I think if we can actually find a way to to, if I tell it to my colleagues in Trinity, like, you know, James Wigan and the rest, they think I'm going crazy, but I really believe that this is what we need to do. We need to actually find a way to radicalize them, or to help them radicalize themselves.
Just to go back to what Alessandra was saying and what you're saying, I'd just be worried that maybe this idea of what you're saying, that a lot of migrants don't come forward themselves, and this idea of kind of coaxing them to talk about their experiences, can you not maybe fall into a situation of, you know, creating this other type of relationship which other bodies might have fallen into representing migrants, where you maybe victimize them, or in a way of saying, oh, you're a migrant and, you know, you must have had... You might have suffered racism or whatever. Come in and talk to it by actively going out and seeking that. I'd be a little bit worried. Obviously, it can be done very well, and if you create rapport and you create networks, and it requires time to build up trust. But I'd just be worried if it was done in a slightly short term way or in a too quick way, it can result in something that's possibly unproductive or counterproductive.
I completely agree with you, because migrants are not necessarily victims. Remember, migrants are the plucky ones. They are the really strong people, because think of immigrating from some hole in Somalia, not knowing where you're going, never heard of Ireland, and going through all sorts of really hazardous way and coming here. These are strong people, really strong people, able people. Usually they are the people who are able to do it, but still, you know, experience racism. And they don't call it suffering, they call it experiencing racism. You know, the point is that we have to find a way to create alliances which don't turn them into victims and us into mere perpetrators, us, the great us, or not saying anybody here, you know what I mean? But safe place, a safe space to be able to talk about what's happening to them. I know with Ellen and I doing now these interviews, and she creates a really good, she's very good at creating stuff. Sometimes she's in bits, but what people tell her. And when I read the interviews, I just want to die. What happened to people? Absolutely horrific, you know, experiences. But these are the people who have actually made it. They're very strong, and we can really, I mean, we can, I'm not suggesting let's send them on the barricades. They have to do what they have to do. But create a situation where they feel they can radicalize with other radicals, you know. Not simply look for an intercultural job somewhere, you know. I don't know how to do it. It's a process. It's a very long process. But if you adopt maybe one of these holding centers, you know, if you adopt a group of people, or if you work with one of the groups, you know, and say to them, we'd like to get involved, you know, in some way, as a group. Yeah. Listen to what they want. You know, they may have some, many of them know exactly what they want, you know. So, you know. Yeah.
You said you have a blog, right?
Huh?
You have a blog?
Yes, RoniqueLantin.net.
And there are...
It's called Free Radical.
Yeah.
My blog is called... But it's with a K.
Okay.
But I'm old, so I can do that.
there is a list of all the groups who work for, like, immigration on your blog?
No. The list of these migrant-led organizations is on the Trinity Immigration Initiative. And amongst that, maybe you can send it to people by email, you know?
Maybe
I'll send it to you.
Get an email.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get the emails and if people are here today, and then we can forward around the link to Renit's blog and also to this.
But my blog is not necessarily, my blog is my rantings, you know? I mean, it's really.
I thought it was centered on this.
The research, yeah, and there's some good stuff there, you know, some good links. And the point is to write to some of these people and then maybe call them and say, see, you know, here's a group who wants to do something, you know? It sounds idealistic, but you know, Hannah Arendt said something about utopia. She said, utopia is, yeah, it's a bit unrealistic and all the rest of it, but we need utopia, you know? And when Hannah Arendt said it, I felt, okay, if she thinks that, I can think that as well, you know? You know, maybe I'm just asking you too much, but somebody needs to start the ball rolling, like, you know? We have to start somewhere, because at the moment this is nothing. You know, as Kansika said, Kansika was far from, when the NCCRI closed, the people heard about it from today to tomorrow, and they didn't hear about it by getting a phone call from the ministry, they found it out on the website. Suddenly on the website, this office will be closed next week. Very nice, after people work, then that's us. And Kansika is a Kenyan, is a Congolese. And he was found himself with that job, he got 2 kids. So what he did, he applied for some funding from the World Bank, actually, and he's doing a project in the Congo, you know. So people do various things. People don't kind of become destitute. They are very full of initiative. He's doing a project on constructing safe and clean hygienic toilets throughout Kenya, in like, you know, which is very an amazing thing, you know. That's what he's kind of funded by, you know, the big babies, you know. I don't know what he's doing, but that's what he's doing, you know, when he was fired, you know. Other people have run for local elections, you know, all sorts of things, you know. So they are incredible. But we kind of don't hear about it that much. When during the kind of the interculturalism years, we heard there were articles, whatever. Now nobody writes about anything apart from Metro Air, you know, which still continues to do things, you know. So maybe you can do something with the group, you know.
I just want to ask, do you see the Rwandan classes for migrants here? Or is Leeds was running some English classes here?
Here?
Yeah.
We still have them there on Wednesdays, and they're starting again, start of February.
Right. I think that's, for instance, a really good way to get migrants in, because also these people in direct provisions, they cannot go really to fast courses or anything, so they are just cut out in system. So as well as undocumented migrants, so I think that's actually a really good way to start as well, because you also need to give something back to people if you can. If we invite people, we also need
kind of, undocumented migrants are much harder to get in contact with. You see, asylum seekers are more or less in the system. Mm-hmm. Very hard to find undocumented migrants. You know, this have to be like snowball techniques. You have to meet somebody and then ask about his friends or her friends, and it's hard because they're undocumented by nature, trying to slip under the, you know.
Yeah. Definitely they don't go saying around that they are undocumented.
No.
But for instance, I used to work in the migrant rights center, and I was working the undocumented migrants. So I actually personally have a lot of links that we can use to get in touch with these people, and yeah, that's from there as well.
You see, if you work as an independent organization or group, not organization, it will be much more useful in the end, because what happened time and time again, migrant groups have been taken over, first funded and offered the space, and then taken over. The great example is RRC, which is the Association of Refugee and Asylum Seekers in Ireland, started by an Iraqi refugee and a group of people. Then what is now Spirasi, the Spirit and Fathers, offered them an office, and then offered them space, and then suddenly said to them, yeah, but we're going to call ourselves Spirasi, based completely on Arasi, and you have to pay for your space. And they took over the work they were doing, and Arasi had to disappear, you know? So goodness is not necessarily always, you know, organizational goodness. And church organization, remember, moves a lot to the migrant sector, because before they were in the education and health sector, and now it's a new area that can be good. I mean, I suppose they can't rape as many children in this particular situation, you know. Maybe they can, sorry. But lots of people, lots of groups are kind of headed by church groups. And sometimes they have another agenda, you know. So it's kind of problematic, you know, how to really get the migrants to name their needs in their own words, you know, and to say, this is what we want, this is what we need, and to allow them not to have to speak this language of interculturalism anymore, you know. Excuse me.
Is there any more?
Yeah.
I mean, surely a central part of the problem there was the question of resources. You know, that the unless everybody involved in the group like that already has a very radical critique, if somebody comes along and says, well, we can offer you an office, we can pay a couple of people to work full time, they're going to take it every time. Very much the same thing happened to the unemployment movement in the 80s. Do you have any ideas on how that doesn't happen? Because I think that's a really tough question.
How to find resources?
Yeah, it's partly a question of how you find resources, but it's also a question of how you convince people that don't necessarily already have a very developed radical politics that it's not necessarily a great idea to jump on that when you arrive.
No, I think this is some. How to find resources at the moment is very difficult. You can contract research projects and maybe get some money through various organizations. I mean, Roundtree has been known to fund something in Ireland. You know, it's very hard. The funding situation at the moment is really the worst it's been for years. But to convince people to go the radical way, find the radicals amongst them, but even not necessarily radicalize them. That's one thing. But offer services, another one. Offer a space and offer services. It's two things, you know. If people come here and maybe come to some of these evenings, maybe, you know, maybe they'll say, yeah, that's interesting. Maybe I can afford to act a bit more radically, you know. I mean, they come to talk about you or about Ancien or whatever, and they can't. Yeah, these are interesting ideas. I'd like to read that book, you know. I mean, there are intelligent and educated people out there. Many of them are going crazy, you know. So we will do a service by doing that. Not just giving them English lessons and how to do computer studies, but maybe they think, you know. Not that they don't think, but if you say this, but you're saying only one word, say, yeah, interesting idea, maybe we can develop it, you know. It's not funding, but it's comradeship. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm being completely idealistic here, but I'd like to remain idealistic. I don't have that many years left, and I'd like to remain. No, not that old, but I mean, like, so, you know what I mean? So I don't know. But if anybody wants to talk to me again, write to me by email or whatever, you know, it's no problem. I'm arlentin@tcb.ie. And I'm happy to discuss any ideas that anybody wants, you know. But I'm sure you can go at it yourself very well, you know, or not, as it is maybe.
This recording is of a Better Questions seminar at Sean Esprit. For more details on Better Questions, see www.thought-movement.blogspot.com. You can read Ronit Lenton's blog at www.ronitlenton.net. This audio was recorded and edited for publication on indymedia.ie and elsewhere by Andrew Flood. You'll find over 100 audio interviews, recordings and news reports that I have recorded over the last decade at http://anarchism.pageabout.com/cat/audio.